Ms. Lamb, good morning.
Morning. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Cynthia Lamb. I'm here representing Brenna Roofer and its agent owner, Mr. Alan Jacobson, who is here in the courtroom today. The issue before the court today is whether the Farm Bureau should have been granted summary judgment when it had a broad duty to defend the renter roofer, the plaintiff in this particular case, in a compensable claim, and but that renter roofer had hired outside counsel prior to notification and had attended a mediation, which resulted in a favorable result. It is a renter roofer's position that the district court erred when granting the motion for summary judgment because, while, as this court knows, the duty to defend is extremely broader than the duty to pay any particular claim. And although,
how do you have a duty to defend if you don't know about the claim?
Well, Your Honor, when they did find out about the claim, the duty to defend arises when the face of the complaint states a cause of action which would be compensable under the policy.
And this they didn't find out about it until it was all over the settled.
However, it wasn't paid at that point in time. In fact, it was a mediated agreement that involved several co-defendants. And prior to any payment of the claim, Mr. Jacobson, having only agreed to a $15,000 of a $225,000 settlement, presented the claim on September 12th of 2011. And the adjuster looked at that claim, looked at the complaint, received the complaint September 28th of 2011. And the evidence shows that Mr. Jacobson repeatedly approached the adjuster. She indicated to him they would have done nothing different than what he did in his claim. She stated, Monica Klobinesh stated in her deposition that they would have done exactly the same thing, and Mr. Jacobson in his deposition stated in his calls to her, she had told him it was settled lower than we would have settled it, the cost more than we would have put aside for it, and she indicated to him in numerous calls, did you pay it yet?
So,
and then waited.
What relief are you asking?
We're asking that the matter of the duty to defend and reimbursement of defense costs be remanded to the trial court.
Defense costs.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I would note to the court that in this particular case, there were two separate cases that were being examined. One was a case where the state had brought a case against Rent-A-Roofer. In that particular case, defense was denied to Mr. Jacobson because the allegations were of unworkmanlike conduct. Based on that experience, when he received the second suit, he did not, he retained his own counsel in good faith.
So that somehow excused him from notification?
Well, we're not talking about notification here per se. He should have notified, and that's why we're not pursuing the claim for the money. This is different than other cases where he's just gotten to a place where the company has to write the check. I would point the court, though, to the lower court's decision. On the first case, the state case, which we are not disputing here, but on the first case, the court did take the time to talk about the duty to defend and to talk about that it only arises when the complaint states it, and if the state doesn't complain it, doesn't state it, then the insurer has a duty to go further and find out if there are other facts. In this case, that's not the case, and the court didn't even discuss the duty to defend. In this case, it was on the face of the complaint that the insurance company, when it received it September 28, 2011, recognized, and in fact, in the exhibits that are associated with Ms. Klobinesh's deposition, she states right in there that this would have been covered because of the damages that were caused by the leakage.
Weren't all of the expenses that you're trying to recover already incurred prior to the notification of the insurance company?
The largest portion of them, yes, I would say they were. But I believe that there's enough evidence in the case with regarding Mr. Jacobson's testimony and Ms. Klobinesh's testimony under deposition that showed that there was a material issue of fact as to whether The insurance company was prejudiced when such a reasonable result was reached, and that Mr. Jacobson, in good faith, relied upon the relationship that he had and the result he got from the exact same insurance company in the 2007 case to have him initiate having his own counsel in this particular case. And although there can be a dispute at the lower court regarding how much fees or negotiations or what was fair compared to what the insurance company would have paid, the insurance company did have a duty to defend, and it's not any different than an insurance company that has issued a reservation of rights letter. The insurer goes out, hires their own attorney, the court finds that in fact there was a compensable claim, and then the insurance company has to reimburse for
insurance. It's totally different because the insurance company has been notified, has taken a look at it, and said, I'll defend you under a reservation of rights. But here they had no idea there was even a claim.
And I understand that.
No right to defend themselves, huh?
And what I was saying was no different is the fact that all the expenses were already incurred by the time the insurance company is required to pay that. In this particular case, I would state the court that the lower court didn't even address the duty to defend issue. And a duty to defend being broader requires a showing of prejudice, and that the there is no prejudice where an insured hires an attorney on good faith because of past experiences with the insurance company and reaches a favorable result. And whether that result was favorable or not, this particular court just relied on the footnote, made a footnote relying on Ms. Kovanich's testimony that it was pure speculation what would happen. But that is in dispute because in Exhibit 12, Mr. Jacobson's testimony said, hey, she told me that they would have put aside more. And then in her own testimony, she says we would have done the same thing, hiring defense and so forth.
Counsel, it seems to me that the heart of your argument is that the duty to defend is the same thing as the duty to pay for a defense. Do you agree with that formulation? Is that what you're really trying to persuade us?
Yes.
And have case law that suggests that those two propositions are identical?
Your Honor, I do not have a case law cite with me, but I would say this, that the Nebraska law has plenty of cases where someone has gone on after a reservation letter and retained an attorney, and those defense expenses had to be paid. And I would be happy to provide the court with a cite to that.
Well, the big obvious difference there is the company knows about it. The company knows that its duty to defend has been invoked. Here, the company doesn't know about it until after the expenses are incurred, after the defense has already taken place.
That is correct, Your Honor. However,
where as a matter of law, what error of law do you believe the trial court made?
We believe the trial court did not address the issue of whether there was prejudice with regard to the duty to defend and the defense costs that were being sought under the complaint.
Because of what the trial court said, there's prejudice as a matter of law?
The trial court didn't address it at all with regards to the duty to defend and the defense costs that were being sought. So the trial court stated that with regard to compensation for the settlement proceeds. I would submit to this court that prior to the time that payment was made, that this was an agreement that the insurance company could have stepped in and said, no, we have investigated, we want to do something else with our defense. They received the complaint September 28th. The case was not dismissed because it was not paid until September 28th was not paid until December of that year, and Ms. Kovanich admitted in her testimony that there were like 4 months between the time that they didn't deny the claim until after the payment was made, voluntary payment was made. Reserve the remaining of my time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Nedvick, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. I am Gary Nedvick, and I represent the appellee, Farm Bureau, in this case. We believe that there are two issues for the court's consideration in this case. The first issue is whether the trial court was correct in finding the Farm Bureau was prejudiced as a matter of law because of the failure of the insured to notify Farm Bureau before it settled the case. The second issue is whether Farm Bureau needed to show prejudice given the plain, clear, and unambiguous language of the voluntary payments provision in the policy. At the outset of my argument, I would note that the appellant does not cite any case in which a court required an insurer to pay either a settlement or attorney fees when no notice of a claim was given to the insurer until after the insured settled the case.
Well, this is a breach of contract issue, isn't it?
Well, what the appellant is asking this court to go where no court has gone before. And we believe that the facts in Herman Brothers versus Great West, which the district court cited in her opinion and in reaching the conclusion that Farm Bureau was prejudiced as a matter of law, cannot be distinguished from the facts in this particular case. In both cases, a settlement was entered into by the insured with no notice to the insurers at the time of the settlement. In both cases, the insurers were presented with a demand to pay the amount of the settlement and attorney fees after the fact. And in both cases, the insurer's right to investigate or defend or control or enforce any of its other contractual rights under the policy were extinguished or prevented because the settlement was binding.
But Herman included attorney fees.
Correct.
As in a cost of a defense. Not well, just the underlying exposure, but the
yes,
cost to get
there.
Yes,
they wanted the amount of the settlement plus the attorney fees incurred in reaching that settlement. It's clear under Nebraska law that prejudice is established when an insurer is unable to meaningfully protect its interests as a result of the insured's breach of the policy provisions. And in Herman Brothers, this court held that Great West was prejudiced as a matter of law because it didn't have any opportunity to investigate or defend or to participate at all in any way, shape, or form in the resolution of the case. And as noted by the district court, in the opinion in this case, all Farm Bureau could do here was to pay once the settlement was reached. It was a binding agreement, a binding contract. The insured had to pay that amount, and then the insured, after the fact, turns to Farm Bureau and says, well, no, you pay. Now, there's been a tweak in the argument that was made to the district court as opposed to this court. Appellant has changed counsel. In the lower court, it was claimed that the settlement and the attorney fees should be paid. Now, as I understand the argument in this case is, the appellant now acknowledges that Farm Bureau was in fact prejudiced as a matter of law with respect to the duty to indemnify and does not seek to recover the amount of the settlement. And we don't believe that the court can separate the duty to indemnify from the duty to defend here because the test of prejudice is the same for both duties. Was Farm Bureau unable to meaningfully protect its interests, or in other words, were its contractual rights extinguished by the actions of the insured in entering into a binding settlement without any notification whatsoever to the company?
Well, as I asked your other counsel, how can you have a duty to do something, in this case defend, when you don't even know about it?
Well, I really don't know how to answer that question because I think the answer is it's a rhetorical question. You can't. You can't defend something that you don't know about. You can't take any action to protect your own interests when you don't know about it.
And is the argument that you would have spent this amount on defense fees anyway and therefore you should pay them because you would have had to done that even if you were given notice? Is that the argument?
Well, that gets into the what if. How do we prove a negative? How do we prove what we would have done. Would the insurance company have gone in? Obviously, this was a minor player in this lawsuit. Would they have gone in, done some initial investigation, tried to buy off the nuisance value before hiring me to defend the case? I don't know. They don't want to pay lawyers anymore, I know that. So, that's what insurance companies are doing. So, for me to stand here and to answer what ifs, if the company had been noticed, I mean, that's just pure speculation.
So it's really an obligation under the terms of the policy, and that wasn't met, and therefore they don't have any obligation.
Yes.
So that doesn't go to prejudice then, does it? That just goes to interpretation of the contract.
Well, it does go to...
I don't have any duty, and therefore, because you didn't comply with the terms of the contract, doesn't make any difference whether or not I was prejudiced or not. You didn't perform your duty, therefore I don't have any obligation to defend.
Well, I think there's two routes to the same result. One is the breach of the contract, the other is the prejudice as a matter of law. At the end of the proverbial day, as Paul Pelini would say, you get to the same place. But the second issue that I want to bring up, that's certainly important to my company, is the voluntary payments exclusion. Voluntary payments exclusion specifically provides that no insured, except at the insured's own cost, will enter into a settlement without the company's consent. We cited a number of cases in our brief that held that the clear, plain, and unambiguous language of a voluntary payments provision should be enforced according to its terms. And, you know, this court has said over and over and over again over the years that an insurer may limit its liability and impose restrictions and conditions under the insurance policy that are not inconsistent with public policy or statute. Now, here's where we have a little difference with the district court. Judge Stacy held that notice provisions are not materially different from the voluntary payments provision. Well, the breach of notice provisions relate to actions that are taken before the final resolution of a claim or a lawsuit, or other conditions, such as the duty to cooperate. These are all actions or breaches of the contract by the insured, but before the final resolution of the claim or the lawsuit. And so the insurance company has an opportunity to get into the game, and maybe they can take care of the situation. Maybe there is no prejudice because of a late notice. Maybe there is no prejudice because of a lack of cooperation. But the voluntary payments provision is different. You know, once the insured settles the case in breach of the plain, clear, and unambiguous voluntary payments provision, ball game over. It's done. There's nothing left to be done for the insurance company.
Back to my same questions is that if you don't comply with the terms of the insurance contract, you don't have any coverage.
You're exactly right. You can take either action to reach the same result.
Prejudice isn't an issue because you have these obligations under the contract. If you don't comply, the insurance company has no duty.
I guess, you know, at the lower court, we focused on the issue of prejudice because of this court's decision in Herman Brothers, which is, in our minds, a basic...
Because that was obvious. That was obvious, based on precedent, right?
Yes.
To go to Herman, but is your latest argument that you would want us to comment on this analogy that the trial court made with respect to the two different kinds of provisions, and not endorse it?
That's correct.
For you and your client as a matter of insurance law.
The bottom line opinion that we are asking this court to reach is we're going to enforce the plain, clear, and unambiguous provisions of the voluntary payments provision of the policy. And we're going to enforce that, and because there was a voluntary payment by the insured without notice to the insurance company, according to the policy language, that is the obligation of the insured, and the insured must pay that cost. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal?
She has 41 seconds.
41 seconds, Ms. Lamb.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I would say the fact that there is a voluntary payment provision, which is a cooperation provision, shows that there are two steps to completing what would be a settlement negotiation. And we would put forth that, one, that step, payment step, is the final step in any settlement, which goes back to our argument that the insurance company could have stepped in at some time to stop that.
Well, not if they didn't know about it.
Step in and do what?
Well, step in and say, no, we don't believe you mediated to a proper result. The second thing, I think, is that it shows that the Farm Bureau was on notice prior to the time that payment was made, and therefore they were not prejudiced in this, and I believe that the court got it right.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for this morning. The court is adjourned, and you are excused.